I'm Regina Vaidyanathan, and I'm in North Carolina in the United States. I'm here for the BBC World Service to find out how the political parties are sparring over the right to vote in politics at the polling station.
Now, I do stay away from the beware of the dog signs. I used to kind of just run up and just do all the houses, but I did learn my lesson fairly quickly.
It's a balmy October evening in Winston-Salem, a traditional tobacco town in North Carolina in the United States. With a month to go before polling day for crucial elections, I've come to a suburb known as Greenway, and with a group of around a dozen volunteers who are armed with clipboards, who are knocking on doors and getting people to register to vote. Debony Jones and Eric Ellison have organized this evening's activities.
It's a kind of a transient area also, so there's a lot of rental properties. That's why we like to hit these areas.
Is everybody in your household, is your voter registration up to date at this current address?
I just moved in and I just updated it yesterday. At my son's school.
North Carolina is a highly competitive state. There's a very tight race for the Senate in a seat currently held by the Democrats. But there's more than votes at stake here. The actual act of casting a ballot in the spotlight.
You know, of all the laws and the provisions that they pass, you look at one individually and you might think it's innocent enough, but when you put those seven or eight provisions together and you take away straight ticket voting, you take away their right to do same day early voting, you add in a provision where anybody can challenge your vote, you add in a provision where we can, if you're not voting in the right precinct, we're just going to throw your ballot out. When you add all of those up in sum total, it has a crushing, devastating effect that will affect communities.
North Carolina is center stage in a row which has been brewing since the 2000 election debacle in Florida. On the one hand are activists like Eric and Debony, who accuse Republicans in the state legislature of playing dirty with democracy. They believe controversial changes introduced in 2013 will hit turnout, particularly for groups which traditionally vote Democrat. On the other hand, you have Republicans who argue the measures in their new law will help cut out election fraud, and that there are still plenty of opportunities for every voter to cast a ballot. What's happening here is perhaps the most controversial example, but other states, more than 20, have also changed their voting laws. It's one of the biggest stories in American politics of the last decade, one which is coming to a head right now.
They're not all.
Why do we have this voter suppression law in effect? It's because we had a record turnout in 2008, a record number of African Americans, we had a record number of Democrats, and we elected, a southern state elected a Democrat, African American, North Carolina, voted for Barack Obama. Now, in 2010, he wasn't on the ballot. Folks stayed home. So what do we get as a result? We get the most oppressive voter law in the entire union. And so, you know, just because the president is not on the ballot, we still have many important elections. You know, obviously we have state house, state senate, we have U.S. Senate, we have U.S. Congress. So the people who we elect will have a huge impact on our lives.
But there's something else too. This is the South, and until recently most states in this region were severely restricted in the kinds of laws they could pass about voting. Last year the Supreme Court changed that, leaving many African Americans, including those in this predominantly black area of Winston-Salem, deeply worried about what might follow.
It's my biggest fear that people will just get so deterred and so depressed or so suppressed that they just give up and not want to vote anymore. That's my biggest fear. And I almost think that's the hope of some of the people that are putting these laws into place. And so that's really what drives me, just kind of seeing our history go back, you know, right before our very own eyes, and having to fight for the same things that my grandparents fought for. You know, it's just ridiculous. Absolutely. It's crazy.
Alongside Eric and Debony's work on the doorstep, a tense battle's being played out in the courts. Earlier this year, a number of groups backed by the US Department of Justice filed a lawsuit to overturn the measures. 2 weeks before I arrived here, a judge in North Carolina upheld the state's new voting law. Then, a week later, that ruling was appealed, and the results of that appeal are expected as I speak. Those who passed the law are clearly committed to it, so I'm going to head down to the small town of Dunn in the centre of the state. It's home to David Lewis, the Republican chair of the Elections Committee in the State House of Representatives and one of the architects of the bill. He's not a full-time politician, though. He has another job, one which is inextricably linked to the state's economy and its history.
So this tobacco's been in the barn for about 3 days.
So you'll dry this out?
Right.
And that's what we see in a cigarette, eventually?
Yes.
Why did North Carolina's law need reform, the voting law?
We made it clear when we sought office in 2010 that improving the integrity of the voter system was going to be one of the objectives that we sought to bring about. We, as Republicans, want everyone who is entitled to vote to be fully able to exercise that most precious right equally. We believe one person denied the right to vote is a terrible tragedy, and we are doing everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen. In the same breath, though, a person who has their vote diluted by votes cast in error or by fraud has also been disenfranchised, and we intend to protect everyone. We intend to continue to improve the real and the perceived integrity of the election system.
So the main driving factor for these changes are voter fraud and trying to combat that?
I think it's important to say that it improves the entire election administration, which in turn improves the both real and the perceived integrity of the system.
We've seen figures that show there's fewer cases of potential voter fraud over the past 5 or 6 years. Is that worth making all these changes?
The changes that you're referring to are only about 4 years old. We are simply mainstreaming our system. And you mentioned the number of voter fraud cases. I would ask you, is the number of voter fraud cases low because the amount of voter fraud has been very low? That's possible. Or is it low because it's so hard to catch, it's so hard to prove, and even if you did, under North Carolina law, it's such a low penalty that district attorneys tell us that it's not even worth their time to try and prosecute it.
Hand on heart, this is not what some people would say a thinly veiled attempt to disenfranchise certain groups.
The right to vote is a hard-won, sacred right that we want everybody to be able to exercise equally.
Some people in Winston-Salem say these provisions, the challenge at the polling station, take North Carolina back to the pre-civil rights days.
Completely absurd. This is nothing more than the latest political hyperbole to stir up the liberal Democratic base. So I would reject that any of these changes we've done have, in fact, made it harder to vote.
While I was interviewing David, news came through that the appeals court had ruled on the lawsuit, upholding most of his law, but deciding that same-day registration and out-of-precinct voting should be allowed. And as I speak, that decision in turn looks likely to be appealed, this time to the US Supreme Court. A central part of the state's case has always been that there's a genuine concern about voter fraud. Most academics who study election law in the United States say that evidence of fraud is limited and isolated. But in making their argument, North Carolina's Elections Board points to problems with elections in 2013, which happened in the very south of the state. So I'm going to travel there to meet Donnie Douglas, who's editor of the local paper, The Robersonian.
We print newspapers from all of southeastern North Carolina. It runs all day. And I know if it's not running, it needs to be running.
Okay, well, in Pembroke last year, the 2013 municipal election, there were allegations pretty quickly of fraud. The election was a very close election, and there was a do-over vote, and the results of the election flipped. Okay, that was the second time since 2007. It was the first time. There was a Lumberton City Council election that ended in a tie vote. In both instances, there were a lot of accusations of voter fraud, and specifically same-day registration and same-day voting. I do know that every single municipal election in Robeson County from 2013 is under investigation right now. I've also talked to the investigator, and he has said that there will be some findings, some determinations, although it is ongoing. The problem in Robeson County, you know, in my view, is we have an undereducated populace, 68% minority, people who historically haven't gone to the polls because they were denied access to the polls, who are picked up, driven to the polls, told who to vote for, and this is how elections are determined.
And how widespread do you think this is from what you've done in your reporting? Is it just Pembroke? Have you seen cases?
No, it's not just Pembroke. It's all across the county. And both sides are, you know, are disingenuous when it comes to election laws. I think Republicans do want to make it more difficult for minority people, people who vote traditionally Democrat, to vote. I don't think there's any question about that. But I think at the same time, Democrats turn a blind eye to the fact that there are these isolated cases, and they can't have an impact. So I just think there's, you know, needs to be some honesty about the debate.
So what do you think of the changes, and you broadly support them?
Well, I do support them because of what our experience here. You know, now, are we treating migraine with heroin? I mean, are we overreacting? Should North Carolina law be based on what happens in Robeson County? Well, I don't think we're unique. It might be a little worse here.
All of this has the feel of the old South, but that's just one side of this state. The other's more cutting edge and dynamic, and has led many to call North Carolina part of the New South, with an economy powered by a major banking centre in Charlotte and life sciences and technology around Raleigh and Durham. The state's also full of universities, with tens of thousands of students. For Democrats in recent years, that's been a boon, while for Republicans, this changing demographics presented, well, a challenge. Now, across North Carolina, Democrats are complaining that as well as the new voting law, at local level, Republicans are introducing a series of administrative changes, like moving voting sites off campus, making it harder for students to vote. And that's just what's happened in Boone, in the northwest of the state.
My name is Stella Anderson. I'm a faculty member at Appalachian State University, and I spent 8 years as the chair of our county board of elections.
My name is Ian O'Keefe. I'm a senior at Appalachian State University. I graduated in December 2014. I've registered many, many students to vote. I've been active in getting students out to the polls through my activism with College Democrats and other organizations.
This campus has to win the prize for the most stunning university I've ever visited. But this unbelievably beautiful campus is also the scene of what's become a rather ugly quarrel over access to polling places. No campus site for early voting. What's the implications of that?
Well, it just makes it more difficult for students to get out and vote. I think that at the end of the day, the Student Union polling location was accessible to students, to faculty, to what is about 30% of Watauga County voters. Now it's more difficult. Now people are confused about the process, where to vote, how to vote, what they need to vote, and it makes it so people are less likely to go out and vote.
So let's go through this step by step. For early voting, there's no polling station on campus anymore. So where would you go and vote?
You have to go down to the courthouse in downtown Boone. It is about a 20-minute walk.
But Ian, it's only 20 minutes. I mean, you're a young, active man. You can take that journey.
Well, I mean, I'm a full-time student. I work full-time. And walking 20 minutes each way to go and vote is difficult. It's difficult for me as somebody who cares about what's going on. It's difficult for students who care about what's going on. But really, the purpose of this is to make it more difficult. It's to put barriers into place, in my opinion. And I think that's the problem. A lot of these students are going to be first-time voters. And we want them to understand it. We want them to get into patterns of voting where they're going to vote for the rest of their lives.
Let's bring Stella back in. You're telling me they've got a political agenda. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, and that's borne out by the data. Probably about a good 65-35, they will break towards Democratic candidates.
And how many votes, then, are we talking about?
We're probably talking at least 3,000-4,000 campus voters.
Two-thirds of those likely Democrat, from your calculation.
I would say that's a good ballpark.
That could decide a race.
Absolutely.
I've come here to the other end of town to meet Bill Aceto, the Republican who took over from Stella and the Democrats on the County Elections Board. So, Bill, we've walked about 20 minutes and we're now on campus. There's nothing on campus now for students who want to cast an early ballot.
Correct. There's no early voting located on ASU's campus. So I have a map here, and it shows you the five early voting locations. So as we open up the map here, we have radius circles driven along them. 90% of the county is covered by this map, and the residents are within a 5-mile accessibility to an early voting location.
But Bill, you can't get away from the fact that Boone is where the vast majority of the electorate are. Majority of those are students who tend to lean Democrat. Yet you've taken out the polling station for early voting on campus, and you've put these other ones dotted around in rural areas, which, let's face it, are more likely to vote Republican. You can't help thinking this is a slightly partisan move.
I disagree with that. Our job as election board is to follow the North Carolina Constitution and the statutes. We've increased voter participation in every election and have a higher voter turnout, so I think we'll continue to do so. And our goal is to establish these voting locations that are fair for everyone.
But they're not fair for everyone, are they, Bill? It makes it more difficult. And isn't the whole point of being on the county elections board making it easier for people to vote? And that might mean you have to go an extra mile for certain groups like students who we know are historically less likely to turn out.
Yeah, or they could go the extra less than a mile to walk to vote or to take the bus. I think there's plenty of opportunities. And I just do not buy into the mantra that we're limiting or restricting access.
But North Carolina's courts didn't agree with Bill. And just a week after I visited Boone, there was a victory for Ian and Stella. A judge upheld an appeal from them, ruling that a major purpose of Bill's early voting plan was intended to discourage student voting and was therefore unconstitutional. He instructed the elections board to put an early voting location on campus. And this is a battle which is being fought in county after county across North Carolina. Democrats complain the same patterns being repeated, with early voting sites removed from areas with lots of black and student voters, and early voting cut back on Sundays, when many black churches have traditionally run their souls to the polls operations. Under the Voting Rights Act from the Civil Rights era, making these kinds of administrative changes, let alone passing sweeping election laws, was illegal in most of the South, including some counties in this state. But much of that's now changed, and to understand how, I found myself at the state's most famous barbecue restaurant in Lexington. Martha Kropf, a professor at the University of North Carolina, had asked me to meet her there.
So what we've seen since the 2000 election is a lot more changes, a lot more requirements that are restrictive of voter turnout, or arguably so, right? And that's progressed, but I think we saw a lot more of it starting with last summer. Last summer, part of the Voting Rights Act was struck down by the United States Supreme Court. So what happened here in North Carolina and what we're seeing across the nation, or at least in these covered jurisdictions, is a lot of the state legislatures changed the laws fairly quickly to something that many would argue are more restrictive.
So how would you characterize this trend then?
Well, I would say that a lot of these laws that are passing are going to reduce voter turnout. What we knew for a long time about early voting is, for example, that it was a convenience for people who are going to vote anyway. But I think what we're seeing is that because of the way the parties are using it, they're bringing out more new voters, more student voters. But another thing that's sort of interesting, and this goes back to North Carolina and really kind of a move nationally, is college students are being limited in how they can vote. And the identifications required for college students to vote and the registration laws, and we've always tried to protect college students' ability to vote, but yet there seems to be a trend now toward trying to reduce college student voting. There's not a lot of empirical evidence about that yet, but I think we pretty much know that it's going to, so it's something that needs to be studied.
Before traveling to North Carolina, I went to a press conference at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., where I put a question to the Attorney General, Eric Holder.
You mentioned voting rights. Do you have an indication of how many Americans could be denied the right to vote come the midterm elections because of the changes across America?
I mean, I think that's hard to quantify, but, you know, in light of the fact that one of the, I guess the primary reason for these new, what I would call voting restrictions to be put in place is this notion of voter fraud, given the fact that there's been really no, I think, credible indication that we're dealing with that kind of problem. The question really becomes, why put these measures in place? So it's hard to quantify what the numbers are, but I think we have certainly shown through cases that we have brought in one that these kinds of measures have a negative impact on the ability of certain communities to cast ballots.
If anyone's promoted the idea of a serious problem with voting fraud, then it's the Kansas Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, and he seems to have data to back up his concerns. It's the middle of election season in Kansas, but he has agreed to speak to me on the phone, so I'm just going to call him up now.
Hello?
Hi there, this is Regini Vaidyanathan from the BBC. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me. We wanted to talk to you about the programme that you've been running to track down people who are voting in multiple states. You've got an awful lot of data about this now. How serious a problem do you think voter fraud is in America?
It is a very serious problem. The evidence is pretty powerful. We have about just over 100 million voter registration records.
So these are records, but how many of these have actually been investigated and ultimately turned into prosecutions of specific voter fraud?
Well, in a smaller state like Kansas, for example, we have seen in recent years typically between 10 and 20 people voting in Kansas and in another state. But in a larger state, say like North Carolina, which recently joined the program and found it appears over 500 people who voted in their state and in another state, the problem can be quite big.
It's still a very small percentage, though, of the voting population.
Sure. Yeah, people who vote twice represent a very small percentage of total voters. But the question is not, what is the percentage? The question is, in a close race, how many are there?
Kansas and Arizona, and both of those states, you require proof of citizenship before you can register to vote. We know from figures from your office that that's meant some 20,000 people have had their registrations held up. Have you got the balance wrong between genuine voter fraud and actually suppressing people's votes, particularly with groups who are tending to vote Democrat?
No, I don't think we have the balance wrong, and it's important that we use the words correctly. And no one's being disenfranchised if they are merely being asked to prove their citizenship at the front end of registering to vote. And we have found no evidence that this disproportionately affects certain groups. And, you know, that is a constant hobby horse of the left, that perhaps there can be some racial correlation found in the ability to produce a photo ID out of one's wallet or in the ability to find one's birth certificate. So we believe we have struck the right balance with election security and ensuring that our elections are fair and that at the end of the day, the result is the correct one.
So this is the core of the question that I'm looking at. How do you strike a balance between eliminating fraud from the voting system and ensuring that any measures don't obstruct the legitimate right to vote? It seems unlikely that there'll be an easy resolution to this anytime soon. As we're recording this, groups across North Carolina are nervously awaiting a decision from the US Supreme Court on the lawsuit. One person waiting particularly nervously is Kay Hagan, the Democratic United States Senator for North Carolina, who's in an extremely close battle for re-election. And I'm going to head to her campaign office in Greensboro now.
Well, first of all, I think nobody should be putting up barriers at the ballot box. People have fought and died for their constitutional right to vote. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous that the state of North Carolina, our General Assembly, my opponent, Tom Tillis, put these barriers up. First, they say we need a photo at the ballot box. And the State Board of Elections said there's been two cases in 10 years where a photo ID would have changed the outcome. But what's really damaging is, on light of that red herring, to say, oh, we're going to take a week of early voting away. We're going to take away same-day registration. We're going to take away provisional balloting. There's one entity that's already come up with 500 different people across the state that voted in 2012, that those votes would not be eligible to be counted in 2014 based on these new laws. And that's a barrier at the ballot box that didn't exist in 2012. And that's why I'm fundamentally opposed to what this Republican General Assembly put forward. I think it's wrong. I think it is, in fact, targeting, in many cases, Democrats, but it's really targeting everybody's right to exercise that right to vote.
Let me put to you what a newspaper editor that we met in the south of the state said to us. He said that Republicans need to stop pretending that they're not doing this for partisan gain. But on the same note, he said Democrats need to stop pretending there's no voter fraud.
I would tend to go back to the Board of Elections. If there is voter fraud, I'd like to see exactly what and where, and I have not seen that.
Since my trip to North Carolina, the courts have made a series of important rulings on whether new voting laws should apply for this year's elections. Most went in favor of the Republicans trying to tighten the rules in Ohio, Texas, and here in North Carolina. So David, the state politician, gets to keep his law. But the longer-term picture remains unclear. In North Carolina, there'll be a full trial of the voting law next year. Elsewhere in the country, other voter ID measures will face further legal challenges. And in Arkansas, the state courts have already ruled their strict voter ID unconstitutional. So the bigger question is, where does this leave American democracy? Martha Kropf, the university professor again.
Right now, there seems to be a burden of proof on the voter to establish that they are able to vote. And there are many experts, observers, that would argue that that is not how it should be in this democracy. Politics is always going to determine our election laws. The people who are most affected by it are the people who are making the laws, right? They're not necessarily making the laws with the idea of democracy, but rather they're making the laws with this idea of winning elections.
Politics at the Polling Station on the BBC World Service was presented by me, Regina Vaidyanathan, and the producer was Giles Edwards.